Hello, my friends. It's Monday, April 21st, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We got a jam-packed show for you this morning. So much to get to from over the weekend, including updates on the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the El Salvadoran man who has resided in Maryland for 14 years and is now being held in El Salvador. They moved him from the Secaut prison to some other prison following the visit by his senator, Chris Van Hollen, who is the rising star in the Democratic Party. He was all over the Sunday talk shows. We'll catch you up on all the latest details on Abrego Garcia's case, as well as other cases happening in this case of mass deportation that's happening throughout the United States. Also, more shocking news from our DUI hire, the Secretary of Defense and former Fox News morning host, Pete Hegseth, caught in another signal chat broadcasting secret attack war battle plans to people who should not know them. We'll give you the details on that. Also, RFK Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is still out there proclaiming an autism epidemic. We'll tell you why that is complete bunk. And some drama in the Democratic National Committee as we have David Hogg, the survivor of the Parkland massacre, who's now a vice chair of the DNC, gearing up to primary some of the older incumbents of the Democratic Party. Speaking of older Democrats, James Carville's not too happy about that, and we'll give you what's brewing to be a battle between the two generations in the Democratic Party. Also, we've got news from Wisconsin, where a Democratic governor out there did a cute little trick with numbers to turn a two-year funding increase for education approved by the Republican legislature into a 402-year increase. We'll tell you how he did it. Then in our regular Boycott Idaho segment, we've got an update on our first Boycott Idaho story we brought you on this podcast, the story of Dr. Teresa Borenpaul, who was violently ripped out of a meeting for disagreeing, violently ripped out of a town hall, I should say, for disagreeing with the Republicans there. We've got an update on the people who ripped her out of that town hall. Charges are now being filed. And I've got a story about the Idaho Republicans creating their own DOGE committee. And I've got a suggestion on where they could get rid of some redundancy, waste, fraud, and abuse. And then we'll close things up with my radical rant. I went out to the No Kings Day protest in Grants Pass, Oregon, and I got to tell you about the MAGA asshole who tried stirring up trouble, as well as the anti-abortion protester I finally got to ask at a very important question. All that coming up on the Radical Russ Show. But before we get to all that serious stuff, a couple of quick little notes that I have to bring up to you. First of all, thoughts go out to all the worshipers and admirers of Pope Francis, who passed away on this morning, Easter Monday, at the age of 88 years old. And sadly, the last member of any national delegation, any national politician to have visited Pope Francis was J.D. Vance. So that says something when you meet with J.D. Vance, you're like, you know, I've had it. That's it. We're gone. So sad. Pope Francis was one of the most progressive popes of my lifetime. It's sad to see him go, and I hope that whoever replaces him can be as progressive or more so. And speaking of 88-year-olds, a happy birthday goes out to George Takei, one of the last surviving members of the original Star Trek series, along with Walter Koenig and the inimitable William Shatner, who's well into his mid-90s by now. Happy birthday to George Takei. Also, it was Easter this weekend, and I just wanted to read the Easter message from our President of the United States, Donald Trump, who wrote on Easter, quote, "Happy Easter to all, including the radical left lunatics who are fighting and scheming so hard to bring murderers, drug lords, dangerous prisoners, the mentally insane, and well-known MS-13 gang members and wife beaters back into our country. Happy Easter also to the weak and ineffective judges and law enforcement officials who are allowing this sinister attack on our nation to continue, an attack so violent that it will never be forgotten. Sleepy Joe Biden purposefully allowed millions of criminals to enter our country, totally unvetted and unchecked, through an open borders policy that will go down in history as the single most calamitous act ever perpetrated upon America. He was by far our worst and most incompetent president, a man who had absolutely no idea what he was doing. But to him, and to the person that ran and manipulated the auto pen, perhaps our real president, and to all of the people who cheated in the 2020 presidential election in order to get this highly destructive moron elected, I wish you, with great love and sincerity and affection, a very happy Easter.
That's just what a poisoned human being this man is. How pathetic a statement on Easter of all days. How did we manage to end up in this nightmare again? Actually, I know how, but I'm not going to go into it right now. Also, I want to note one other thing about Easter happening this year. Easter happened this year on 420, the stoner holiday, which is also Hitler's birthday, which is also the anniversary of the Columbine massacre that began our mass school shooting epidemic that we've been living through here for the past quarter century. How come nobody made a big fuss about scheduling Easter at the same time as 420 and Columbine and Hitler's birthday? Because I remember last year when Easter was on the same day as the Trans Day of Visibility, they made a big stink about marking the Trans Day of Visibility on Easter, but somehow 420 and Columbine and Hitler on Easter didn't get a mention from anybody on the right. I wonder why that is. Well, when we spoke to you on Friday, we had discussed the amazing success of Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland flying down to El Salvador to meet with Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He was rebuffed at first, stopped by soldiers about a kilometer or two away from the prison, not allowed to go because he's not a Republican member of the House going there to get selfies in the prison. That's apparently the only ones they let in. But anyway, Van Hollen finally was able to meet with the vice president, and that led to a meeting with Kilmar that they set up at the pool, trying to make it look all fancy and put Kilmar in a nice shirt and nice hat, fake margaritas around the table to make him look like he's in some sort of resort. And following his visit there, we got notes from the president of El Salvador as well as the White House, expressing how Kilmar is there permanently. He gets to stay in El Salvador was the tweet from Bukele, the president of El Salvador. Now that he's been determined to be alive, he gets the privilege of staying in El Salvador, I think was the actual wording. And the Trump administration put forth in their White House account a doctored picture of the New York Times headline, crossing it out and editing it to make it MS-13 illegal gang member who will never return, So good news for all of the attorneys that are prosecuting the Trump administration for their failure to follow the orders of the Supreme Court and lower courts who've been arguing in court that, oh, yeah, sure, we're trying. We're going to give it a try. We'll let you know what's happening. Meanwhile, at the top, they're telling you he's never coming back. They're never going to let him come back. They know what he has to say would be devastating to their cause of trying to get America behind the idea of abandoning due process and just shipping people off to a concentration camp. And the good news here is that do something works. It's finally a time where the Democrats did something. And there have been so many out there that complain about us on the left online who keep saying, do something, you got to do something, not just sternly written letters, you got to do something. And they've always poo-pooed us, oh, we know what we're doing, they won't have performative acts, etc. And here Chris Van Hollen goes out and does something, gets wall-to-wall news coverage. He was on every one of the Sunday morning shows like Meet the Press, Face the Nation, the CNN, MSNBC. He was on all of the shows, which just goes to prove, Democrats, if you get out there and lead, if you do something, the media will follow and the people will follow. And one of the people who was poo-pooing this, who was tutting at us, was the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, his career has just flamed out as far as I'm concerned. He starts off with platforming Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon on his podcast. And now, in this Kilmer Abrego Garcia case, Gavin Newsom called it a distraction. This man being kidnapped and renditioned and human trafficked to a hellhole to die with no charges against him, with no sentence rendered against him. Gavin Newsom called that a distraction and said we need to get back to the tariffs. They don't want to argue about the tariffs, you see. They don't want to argue about the tariffs. This is all a distraction. They came up with this plan to totally destroy due process and ruin the lives of hundreds as a distraction from the tariffs issue. That's what Gavin Newsom thinks. Well, I was glad to see Chris Van Hollen on Meet the Press being asked about this by Kristen Welker, and his response was perfect.
On Governor Gavin Newsom of California calling Mr. Abrego Garcia's case, quote, the distraction of the day. He argues Democrats are playing right into the hands of President Trump, an issue he wants to be focused on. How do you respond to Governor Newsom?
I don't think it's ever wrong to stand up for the Constitution. And this is not about one man. If you deny the constitutional rights of one man, you threaten the constitutional rights for everybody. I think Americans are tired of elected officials or politicians who are all finger to the wind, what's blowing this way, what's blowing that way. And anybody who can't stand up for the Constitution and the right of due process doesn't deserve to lead.
Absolutely correct. And that is exactly why Democrats have been hemorrhaging voters. It is exactly why we see only 27% approval rating for the Democratic Party at this point. It's exactly why the Democratic Party is 9 points underwater with their own voters. Democrats have a 49-40 disapproval of what Democrats are doing. Because as I've said time after time, Democrats don't believe their shit like Republicans do. Republicans believe their shit. They absolutely believe in what they believe. Tax cuts for the wealthy, make abortion illegal, deport every illegal immigrant. They believe their shit. And they're willing to take the L for believing their shit. The anti-abortion stance has always been a minority position in this country. But they believe that shit. And so they were willing to go out election after election believing that shit. Election after election, standing up to end abortion. And look what happened. After 50 years, they finally pulled it off because they continued to believe their shit. Chris Van Hollen believes his shit. And part of that shit that the Democrats need to believe is to stand up for the Constitution, stand up for due process, stand up for the least among us. That was the way these parties were originally designed, at least as I understood them as a kid. That the Democrats were the mommy party that takes care of the people, and the Republicans were the daddy party that takes care of the businesses. And that was a nice little yin-yang balance until about the Clinton administration, when they decided, hey, we'll be the business party too. To hell with all the little guys out there. They don't have any money to send us. So kudos to Chris Van Hollen for standing up for us. And I want to bring up a point that Will Stancil made online. Commentator at W.H. Stancil on Blue Sky, talking about how politicians like Newsom want to get back to kitchen table issues, want to get to issues like the economy and the tariffs, and don't want to talk about due process and deportations and immigration and trans rights and such. Will Stancil writes this: the pundits and politicians who want Dems to campaign on kitchen table issues aren't looking for issues that are more universal or easier for voters to understand. They're looking for issues that are boring, that steer clear of conflict and avoid fault lines of race or gender. The kitchen table frame is adopted as a rhetorical mechanism to make it seem like random economic policy is somehow more interesting to voters than fundamental questions about basic rights and fairness. But it's the opposite. The economic stuff is dreary, opaque, while values issues are electric. That's precisely what scares the kitchen table crew. They hate that things like immigration abductions or MAGA racism seize the public mind so completely. They want politics to consist of sleepy policy debates where voters decide between competing policy proposals. Fantastic analysis from Will Stancil. That's exactly what's going on. They want to make this all about class. And yes, there are a lot of class issues. Bernie Sanders talks about that all the time. The 1%, the oligarchy. But you can't talk about class without also talking about race, without also talking about gender. These things are intersectional. So there's been a lot of response to Van Hollen and what's going on there. And one of the responses came from Mike Collins, a representative of the House, who went over to the Senate side and taped up a piece of paper over Chris Van Hollen's nameplate up there at his Senate door, where it would normally say Chris Van Hollen, you know, Senator Maryland, right? They went and put a sign up that says Chris Van Hollen, Senator El Salvador. That's their joke, that now Chris Van Hollen is the senator from El Salvador. Well, funny thing, Representative Collins, if he's the senator from El Salvador, then that must mean El Salvador is our 51st state. And if it's a state, it no longer has national sovereignty. And as a state, is subject to our federal courts. So that would mean, as the senator from the state of El Salvador, Van Hollen should have been flying back with Kilmer Abrego Garcia from one state to the other state. These MAGA assholes. They are so frustrating to me. And speaking of MAGA assholes, you saw what Trump did with this. So Trump is continuing to push the line, and all the people below him trying to push the line that Abrego Garcia was some terrible wife-beating MS-13 gang leader, human trafficker, terrorist in waiting. And you know that they're pumping this up so strongly because they don't have a leg to stand on in court. The man has no criminal record in the United States or in El Salvador. So Trump went and tweeted out a picture because they're trying to say that Kilmer Abrego Garcia was obviously MS-13. Number one, because he had a Bulls hat on in Maryland. Why would anyone in Maryland wear a Chicago Bulls hat? Everyone knows the Chicago Bulls hat is the sign of MS-13 gang leadership. Mm-hmm. And he had a hoodie on that had some pictures of dollars with rolls of cash over the eyes of the president. So clearly gang member attire, hoodie and Bulls hat. But then Trump also tweeted a picture out of Abrego Garcia's hand. And on his hand, he's got knuckle tattoos across the four fingers of one hand, right? And the tattoos are, there's a pot leaf on the first finger, a smiley on the middle finger, a cross on the ring finger, and a skull on the pinky finger, right? And that supposedly means he's part of MS-13. But in addition to that, Trump photoshopped, or someone photoshopped for him, because I have no doubt he can't use a computer, but they photoshopped over the top of each one of those single tattoos on each knuckle above it with the default Calibri font that you'd find in Microsoft Word, the letters MS and then the number 1, number 3 over the marijuana smiley cross and skull. It literally photoshopped MS-13 onto the guy's hand. This is right out of taking the Sharpie to make the hurricane swerve past Alabama. This is the same level of idiotic propaganda from the Tangerine Toddler. Just type MS-13 over his hand. And the sad thing is, so many of his MAGA minions will see that and believe it. Now, of course, the explanation is, oh, they're not trying to say the MS-13 letters are the part of the tattoo. They're trying to show that the M for marijuana and the S for smiley and the 1, like the stick in the cross, and the 3, I don't know how a skull is a 3, but that's how they're trying to make it. They're trying to make MS, marijuana, smiley, cross, skull, 13. Folks, no law enforcement agency in the United States has any guidelines in their manuals whatsoever that says that combination of tattoos is any sort of gang tattoo. And furthermore, this whole bullshit about gang tattoos, you know what makes a tattoo a gang tattoo? It's on brown skin. Because Pete Hegseth has some tattoos on his white skin that indicate some sort of gang affiliation, white Christian nationalism. And then we have the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, their sheriff's deputies who were all members of various sheriff gangs, they had tattoos as well that displayed their gang membership. So is that the way it goes now? We're going to start rounding up all the gang members? Well, there's some problems with that as well. Another problem with the Abrego Garcia abduction and human trafficking is the administration keeps putting out this propaganda, like the stuff with the tattoos and the hat and the hoodie. One other thing they put out is that when they caught him there in 2019 at the Home Depot trying to get day labor, he was standing there with like three, four other guys. A couple of guys had been identified as being his MS-13 gang members. And they said, one of their informants, their snitch, the snitch who told the cop who was then busted three, 4 days later and given leave for being unreliable, this guy, this unreliable cop, and this snitch who's been accused of lying. Anyway, they went and said that he was a member of the Westerns clique of MS-13, a clique that is based in Long Island, New York, and he was in Maryland, right? But he was part of the Westerns clique, and he had a nickname of Chequeo. And that's spelled C-H-E-Q-U-E-O. Chequeo was his nickname. That was his gang nickname. Well, some folks did some digging on this, and they found that Chequeo, in the MS-13 parlance, is a nickname, and it stands for a recruit yet to be initiated. So, a recruit yet to be initiated. So he wasn't in MS-13. They maybe were wanting him to be in MS-13. Maybe they were talking to him about joining MS-13. But Chequeo means he had yet to be initiated in MS-13. So every excuse, every bit of propaganda they try throwing against the wall to stick is not sticking. People are debunking it quite easily. So, with that not working, Trump tried another tack to bring public opinion to his side, and he brought the mother of a woman who had been raped and killed by an MS-13 gang member. So, we're supposed to be upset about a guy who wasn't an MS-13 member who committed no crimes because some other guy who was an MS-13 member did commit crimes? We're supposed to be upset about this because they're the same race. That's what it is. It's absolutely disgusting, but it goes to something they really believe. I found this when I was looking around online, and there was a account out there called @TempSoftMax responding to a account called @KateWillett. And @KateWillett brought up this case that Trump is trumpeting, saying, "I'm very sorry that her daughter was murdered, but we don't get to grieve by picking an unrelated person of the same race to spend the rest of their life in a concentration camp." Good point, I would say. And the response from Temporal Softmax, @temp_softmax, was, "This is less of a problem in a class-based society. Criminality is largely genetic. If a family has no crime for multiple generations, then a person deserves innocent until proven guilty and a due process. Son of a violent criminal, not so much." Wow. Now, before I go too much farther on this, I got to tell you, the @TempSoftMax, @Temp_SoftMax, there's a label on it that says it's a parody account. That's not very good parody right there, because you don't see the satire in it. This sounds serious, but I'm going to take it as serious, because if this is a parody, there's at least a few people out there that believe this kind of stuff, that really do believe criminality is genetic, and that Sure, good people deserve due process, but a son of a violent criminal, why, they don't deserve due process. No. That's not the way it works. First of all, this idea of criminality being genetic because, you know, if a family for multiple generations doesn't have any crime, they're likely innocent until proven guilty. Well, if a family doesn't have crime for a lot of generations, that's probably because they have means. They're not desperate. They don't have to commit crimes to get by and to live. They're not living in poverty. They're not living in abhorrent situations, right? This is more of a case of class than anything having to do with genetics. But this is the kind of stuff Trump believes. You'll always hear Trump talking about how his dad was, or his uncle was a professor at MIT, and they have good genes, good genetics. It's the same kind of stuff RFK believes when it comes to vaccines and autism and childhood diseases and the idea that only healthy people will largely not catch diseases. It's because they want the unhealthy ones to die away. It's because they really do believe in this genetic stuff. And so for them, hey, you got one MS-13 brown guy that commits rape and murder, then all brown guys are likely to commit rape and murder. That's the way they believe. I think Trump is going to discover that the American people are very fond of their due process, and nobody defended this better, surprisingly enough, than Joe Rogan.
Thinking things through, like, what do you do about all the criminals? Take them all, fucking send them to El Salvador.
Yeah.
What about due process? No, fuck that. But here's the problem with fuck that. What if you are an enemy of, let's not say any current president, let's pretend we got a new president, totally new guy in 2028, and this is a common practice now of just rounding up gang members with no due process and shipping them to El Salvador. You're a gang member. No, I'm not. Prove it. What? I gotta go to court. No, yeah. No due process.
Joe Rogan making a great case for due process, pointing out the fact that Trump will not always be president, and the next president may select a different set of gang members. Another person commented about this on Blue Sky. Retro Agent 12 on Blue Sky wrote, quote, to everyone cheering on Trump for ignoring court rulings, imagine a future left-wing president declares a national emergency on gun violence, bans AR-15s, and signs an executive order instructing the ATF to confiscate semi-automatic rifles from gun stores. A federal court blocks it, citing the Second Amendment, but the president shrugs, calls the judges activists, and ignores the ruling. Would you still be okay with that? Or would you suddenly rediscover your love for the rule of law? This isn't about immigration or Trump. It's about whether the rule of law means anything to you, or if you only respect the Constitution when it serves your politics. You don't get to scream tyranny over COVID lockdowns or gun restrictions and then celebrate when your guy blows off court orders. That's not patriotism. That's authoritarianism in red, white, and blue drag. You don't get to pick and choose when the Constitution matters. And I'll take that a step further, because I was waiting for Joe Rogan to get around to talking about the future left-wing president who declares the Proud Boys a gang and starts pulling them off the street and shipping them to El Salvador, or the Oath Keepers, or the Three Percenters, or the Michigan Militia, or your local NRA club, or whatever. Note, I am not calling for that. I believe in the rule of law for all sides in this case, and it's about time that their side started to recognize that too. So good on Joe Rogan for defending due process, and let's hope that gets through to all the bros that are listening to his podcast. The Supreme Court now has responded to all of these shenanigans. They have originally made their 9-0 ruling that said the government had to facilitate and effectuate the return of not just Kilmer Abrego Garcia, but the people that are all trapped down there under the Alien Enemies Act. Well, Trump was set to ignore all that again, and they were loading up another plane full of detainees. Now, these Venezuelans managed to get a habeas petition in that was coming up through the Fifth Circuit Court, but Trump was going to go ahead and send that plane anyway. So the Supreme Court, like at 1 a.m, I think it was 1 a.m. my time, maybe it was Eastern, I'm not sure, came out with a 7-2 decision ordering the government to stop all of the deportations under the Alien Enemies Act until that case can wind its way through the Fifth Circuit. And in a shocking move, not just shocking that they published it so late at night, but they also published it before the two dissenters could get their dissent written. They basically said, oh, they'll put out a dissent later. Because they recognized that the two dissenters, Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, as if you needed me to tell you, that Thomas and Alito were purposefully slow-walking these cases and purposefully delaying to make sure another plane could get up in the air and flown to El Salvador. So now we've got somewhat of a battle going on inside the Supreme Court, where they've recognized that two of their members are absolute rubber stamps for Trump and could care less about the rule of law. We'll keep our eye on that as well. People are asking, have we reached the constitutional crisis? Folks, we're knee-deep in the constitutional crisis. They're already ignoring courts. The question now is whether or not they will directly ignore and run counter to this 7-2 SCOTUS decision. Now, some other notes here, because, again, this isn't just about Kilmer Abrego Garcia. While that case is getting the most attention and is the easiest to get one's hooks around because the government itself declared that he should not have been deported, admitted that they had made a mistake, let's not lose sight of all the others, the 260-some-odd people that have been shipped off to that concentration camp, none of whom were convicted of crimes, none of whom were given any due process in this matter. They all should be returned to the United States. They should all get their day in court. That includes Andre Hernandez Romero. Andre Hernandez Romero was the gay hairdresser and makeup artist. They got rounded up because he happened to have a tattoo, who has no criminal record, who is seen in that footage getting his head shaved while he's crying and praying. He doesn't belong there either. And it makes me wonder, where are his senators? He's a California resident. Where's Adam Schiff? Where's Alex Padilla firing up the plane like Chris Van Hollen to go down there to El Salvador to visit with him? Another court has ruled that Rumeysa Ozturk, the PhD student from Tufts University who was grabbed off the street in Vermont and then shipped down to an ICE detention center in Louisiana, the court has ruled that she needs to be brought back to Vermont so that she can get her day in court. So all of this is good news. The wheels of justice are starting to turn. We still face a criminal maladministration that's going to try to stand in the way of all these moves. We saw Tom Holman going out on the morning shows once again, indicating that they believe they're completely in the right and that the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 gives them the excuse they need to completely ignore due process and habeas corpus rights, Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights of these people. And understand, a lot of people get confused about this, thinking that the Constitution only applies to citizens or people here legally. It does not. These constitutional amendments refer to people in the United States. Any person in the United States, legal, illegal, criminal, or not, everyone deserves these equal rights. It's a shame we've got these illegal prison camps, and a lot of people talk about Gitmo in this subject here, but this is worse than Gitmo. At least the guys in Gitmo had access to lawyers. At least the guys in Gitmo had charges filed against them. Maybe if we had gone and closed Gitmo, maybe we wouldn't be so far along the line of having this CECOT in El Salvador. Because I remember way back in 2007, there was a candidate for president who said, quote, "While we're at it, we're going to close Guantanamo and we're going to restore habeas corpus." That candidate, of course, was Barack Obama, who promised to close Gitmo. gosh, if we'd only given him like a 7% popular vote margin for a mandate, and if only we'd have given him like plus 57 Democratic votes in the House, and if only he had 187 days of a filibuster-proof Senate, maybe he could have closed Gitmo and we'd not be so far down the line of having our own damn concentration camps now. Hey, you remember a while back when the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State and the CIA Director and Director of National Intelligence, you remember when they messed up and accidentally invited a reporter from the Atlantic into their private signal chat in which they were using their unsecured personal phones to discuss highly classified battle attack war plans against the Houthis in Yemen? You remember that? Remember, God, a lifetime ago, it seems, these days? You remember that? Well, just as that was starting to fade from the people's memory, just as we were starting to get all worked up about the Kilmar Abrego Garcia case and the tariffs and all of that, it kind of made Signalgate fly off of the radar. Just as that was happening, we get a return to Signalgate. Oh my God. So the latest news out from the Washington Post is that Pete Hegseth, the DUI hire, was once again using a signal chat to communicate top secret war plans, battle plans, attack plans against the Houthis. And this time he was doing it before he was actually confirmed as the Secretary of Defense, but he was still in this chat communicating with high-level officials. And there were 13 people on the chat, and part of the 13 people included Hegseth's wife and brother, and personal attorney. So Pete Hegseth, once again, discussing all sorts of our classified war information with people who do not have the clearance whatsoever, his wife and his brother, and his personal attorney. And the thing that's amazing about this story to me is there were 13 people on the chat, and the Washington Post has sourced this story to four of them who were on the chat. Wow. Okay, so you got 13 people, minus Hegseth, his wife, his brother, and his attorney. That's four of them. You know those four aren't the one that snitched. So that leaves nine people on the chat. Out of nine people that Hegseth found to be his trusted, most close personal advisors, four of them were willing to snitch on him. Four! So, obviously, this is back in the news again. The story is making the rounds, and once again, people calling for Pete Hegseth to be canned, to be axed. This guy is so reckless with our national security. It's amazing. You know that our enemies are just can't believe their luck in this situation. Hegseth's got to go. But his first response was to come out on Twitter against someone who is calling him out on this. And he wrote, "Your agenda is illegals, trans, and DEI, all of which are no longer allowed at DOD. Illegals, trans, and DEI. Remember, for MAGA, DEI is the shortest way to spell the N-word. So you know what they're saying. Your agendas are illegals, trans, and blacks. And that's no longer allowed at the DOD. And we've seen it. We've seen the sacking of all the women four stars and admirals in the at the highest level of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We've seen the sacking of, what was it? They sacked 43 the other day from the Defense Department. Some of the high-level military commanders, and something like 38 of them were women and minorities that they got rid of. This is resegregation we're living through. They want to resegregate America. They want to make sure white people are in charge. Black people, minorities, and women know their place. Our Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert Fuckwit Kennedy, is still out there banging the gong on vaccines and autism. He's promised that by September, we'll have an answer to what are the environmental causes of what he calls the autism epidemic. Autism epidemic. And he says this is an epidemic because, you know, it used to be only 1 out of 10,000 kids was diagnosed with autism. But since vaccines have come into play, now 1 out of 30 is diagnosed with autism. We have an autism epidemic. He also says that it's a terrible epidemic because it's not happening to adults. This epidemic is happening to children. All right. So obviously so much wrong with what Robert F. Kennedy has to say about autism and vaccines. There is a correlation. There is a correlation between autism and vaccines. I'll tell you what it is. As we became more scientifically capable, we developed vaccines. And as we became more scientifically capable, we became better at identifying what autism is. Sure, there's a correlation, kind of like there's a correlation between the spike in shark attacks and the spike in ice cream sales that occurs every summer. That doesn't mean selling more ice cream leads to more shark attacks. Just like having more vaccines does not lead to more autism. We're just better at recognizing it now. We understand it's a spectrum now that can range all the way to the person who is severely developmentally disabled, unable to care for themselves, all the way to the high-end scientists, teachers, actors, musicians, all sorts of people who are on the autism spectrum. We just recognize it better now. And to say that, well, it's only happening to kids is also bullshit. When you go and meet the 60-year-old who's got the desk drawer that they keep the different strands of wire that they've been saving and alphabetizing and color coordinating, that if you suggest to this guy, hey, you know, that's kind of an autistic trait of yours, they would deny it. Oh, no, I'm just fussy. Right? It's a generational thing. People of my generation and older, who demonstrate many autistic traits, do not think of themselves as autistic, nor would they ever consider trying to get a diagnosis for it. They may think of themselves as eccentric or different from other people, but they don't consider themselves autistic. Yeah, we're seeing more autistic kids these days, kind of like now we see more planets than we used to before the telescope existed. Like I said earlier, it's nice to see the Democrats have finally adopted Do Something and are making some waves. Chris Van Hollen, of course, heading down to El Salvador, making waves, making news coverage. Before that, we had Cory Booker doing his 25-hour filibuster speech that, again, drove the news narrative, put him on the late-night talk shows, got him in front of the people. We need to have more of this, more action-oriented Democrats. And to that end, I'm so excited to see David Hogg, the survivor from the Parkland school shooting. David Hogg has become a Democratic activist and has been elected the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee and is now working to put together funding for primary challenges to old Democrats. He's basically looking to pick off some of these Democrats who have been in office for years, if not decades, who are behind the times, who continue to want to push kitchen table issues and duck and cover whenever there's issues of race or gender to have to deal with. Good on him for putting this together. There are definitely some Democrats in need of primarying. I mean, we were talking on the show the other day about how 48 House Democrats and 12 Senate Democrats voted for the Lake and Riley Act, voted for the Show Me Your Papers Act. We had an Oregon Democrat, Janelle Bynum, in the 5th District voted for this damn thing. To have any Democrat voting for an immigration bill that allows ICE to just stop anyone they feel looks like an immigrant and detain them, ask me, show me your papers, prove your citizenship with no warrant, with no probable cause, just because they look like an immigrant. The fact that any Democrat could have even countenanced voting for that, much less gone through with it, shows an amazing crisis in leadership and failure to have any vision as to what the American people need in this time of crisis. We need Democrats who are willing to stand up for our rights, whether it's popular or not. All this poll-tested finger in the wind trying to figure out what's going to be popular. Oh, we better not get too on this Kilmer Abrego Garcia case. What if he does turn out to be a criminal? Oh, we'll look so bad if we were defending a criminal. No, you defend the criminals. I don't care if he's got MS-13 wife beater rapist tattooed on his forehead. I don't care if he's got a rap sheet a mile long. I don't care if he's carrying a bloody knife at the time. Everybody gets due process, even the worst of the worst. Pornographer Larry Flint said it best in his case, People versus Larry Flint, fantastic movie, you ever want to see it, when he said, if the First Amendment can protect a scumbag like me, it'll protect all of you. And that's exactly how our rights work. They have to be applied to the worst of us. The people you think don't deserve them, they have to get due process as well. So David Hogg now, trying to foment some primary challenges to some of these old barnacles on the Democratic ship of state, has drawn the ire of James Carville, the Ragin' Cajun. You remember him from, gosh, was it way back in 1992 when he helped Bill Clinton become president? As David Hogg put it, this guy hasn't won an election since before I was born. Why are we continuing to listen to these old crusty pundits like James Carville? It's a new century. It's a new politics. We need people who understand how to change their passwords on their cell phones running this country. We need new leadership. We need young blood. Good for David Hogg on getting on this. And David Carville, just retire already. You know how Republicans are always trying to stretch the letter of the law to accomplish whatever nefarious deed they have in mind, whether it be gerrymandering, saying, oh, this isn't a racial gerrymander. We just gerrymandered based on the color of the car people drive. Yeah, that's the ticket. They always find some creative way to stretch the letter of the law to make it do what they want, but not exactly what the law intended. Well, do I have some good news for you? Because finally, that has happened on the Democratic side. We take a look at the state of Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, they have a Democratic governor named Tony Evers, and there is a Republican legislature, thanks in part to some of that gerrymandering. And the story is as such. Wisconsin's Democratic governor, Tony Evers, creatively used his veto powers to make a Republican-approved education budget that was an increase for 2 years, make it last for 402 years. And the liberal state Supreme Court has okayed it. Here's the deal. Back in 2023, the Republican legislature approved a budget that had the following provision in the law. It read, for the limit for the 2023 through 2024 school year and the 2024 through 2025 school year, add 325 to the result under paragraph B, which basically meant increased funding for the kids, $325 per kid for the 2023-24 school year and the 2024-25 school year. Okay. So this provision increased the school funding $325 per student for the next two school years. But in Wisconsin, and like some other states, Wisconsin, the governor has the power of line item veto. But in most other states, that means the entire line can be vetoed. In the state of Wisconsin, the governor can veto just portions of the line. So here's what he did. He took that bit of text that read, for the limit for the 2023 through 2024 school year and the 2024 through 2025 school year, he crossed out 24 school year and the 20 and the hyphen between 24 and 25 and the word school year after that. So he took something that read for the 2023 through 2024 school year and the 2024 through 2025 school year and made it read now with the crossouts for the 2023 through 2425 school year. He deleted the 20 and deleted the hyphen so that the second set of dates would be just the year 2425. Kind of reminds me of the old Zager and Evans song, in the year 2525. Yeah, so he made it for the limit for 2023 through 2425. So now that $325 limit that had been for 2 years is now a 402-year funding increase. Naturally, the Republican legislature cried foul about this and took it to the state Supreme Court. While the Wisconsin governor does have that ability to strike entire words, the Republicans argued that Evers' move violated a restriction on that veto power that had been added to the Constitution in 1990. Back then, they created what was called the Vanna White Law, after Vanna White from, you know, Wheel of Fortune turns the letters, right? That banned governors from striking individual letters in words to make different words after a previous governor had done something like that to change the plain meaning of a law. Like, suppose you had the word haven't, you know, the haven't, and then cross out the N apostrophe T to make it have, right? They can't do that in Wisconsin. You cannot cross out individual letters because of this Vanna White law. Well, the 4-3 liberal majority on the state Supreme Court disagreed, ruling that the Vanna White law is silent on the issue of striking individual digits and hyphens from the numbers to make different numbers. So, striking out the 20 and the hyphen, well, that doesn't violate the Vanna White law, and the rest of the strikeouts were entire words, which is completely allowed. So finally, Democrats pull a little trick to be able to help school funding for the next 402 years. Now, you know how this is going to be affected. They'll go back to the legislature next year and try to update that Vanna White law so that you can't strike out individual numbers and hyphens and stuff like that. But then they'll also have to put out a new law that takes away the 400-year funding increase as well, and the governor can just veto that. So good work, Tony Evers. Nice to see Democrats getting creative for a change. All right, time for our regular Boycott Idaho segment, where I remind you to avoid the handmade state. Now with 63 reasons, you can find them all at RadicalRust.com/Idaho. Boycott Idaho, boycott the Idaho potato. No red state is more singularly associated with a product than Idaho and the potato. Let's send an economic message that the blue states will no longer subsidize these backward, regressive red states that mistreat our fellow American citizens. And an update on a previous Boycott Idaho story that we brought you at the very beginning of this podcast release, the story of Dr. Teresa Borenpaul. She was the attendee at the Republican town hall that was going on in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, when she made national news for asking questions and being rejecting some of the Republican talking points up there. And when she vocally rejected them, the brown shirts came and removed her. And this made national stories because they weren't identified. They had no badges. They wouldn't identify themselves. And they dragged her out, you know, physically dragged her out of the meeting. Well, the good news is these six men who did so have now been brought up on criminal charges. They've been arrested for charges that include battery, false imprisonment, security agent uniform violations, and security agent duties violations. The people being charged are Paul Truett, Russell Dunn, Jesse Jones, Christopher Burge, Alex Truett IV, and Michael Keller. Let's see that they get their due process, get their day in court. and hopefully convicted of mistreating this woman and violating her rights. Now, the other story I wanted to bring to you has to do with the state of Idaho's legislature, their Republican-led legislature, that was so inspired by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, you know, the illegitimate doge that's been taking a chainsaw to vital government programs. The Idaho Republicans were so impressed by Doge that they created House Bill 364 to create an official Idaho Doge to tackle waste, fraud, and abuse in the Idaho state government. This was House Bill 364, but the Senate never took up a vote on House Bill 364, and it died. But having an actual legal mandate never stopped Elon Musk's Doge, so why should it stop the Idaho version? The Idaho Capital Sun reported on the announcement by Idaho's Republican leaders that they just went ahead and created the Idaho Doge anyway. We tried to pass it in a bill, but it didn't get through, so what the hell, we'll just make it anyway. Outside the legislature, we'll just decide we're all Doge and do the same damn thing. So the Idaho Capital Sun had a story on this, and there were a couple of quotes at the press conference from a couple of the leaders that I wanted to tackle here. First of all, Idaho's House Speaker Mike Moyle, he said, quote, "Idaho's Legislative Doge Committee is a significant move towards streamlining government operations and enhancing state efficiency," end quote. Gonna streamline operations and enhance state efficiency. Well, turns out Mike Moyle, the House Speaker, is married to former House Representative Janet Trujillo. Now, Mike Moyle lives in Star, which is just 20 miles away from the capital in Boise. Trujillo maintained a residence in Idaho Falls, where she was from, roughly 250 miles away from the capital. In 2017, she claimed the extra $6,400 in per diem that the legislators get when they maintain a second residence in Boise for the legislative session. Except her second residence in Boise was Speaker Mike Moyle's house, where she slept for free. So, do you suppose the Idaho Doge will be tackling that sort of fraud and abuse? Then there's the head of the House Republican Caucus. The chairman's name is Representative Jaron Crane, and he's from my hometown of Nampa. He says, quote, "We have talked a lot about eliminating redundancy, cutting back on red tape, and the responsibility we have to prevent waste. Since 1974, there has been no reconstruction on Idaho's government at all. That was under Governor Cecil Andrus. That was the last time we looked at reorganizing the government and making it more efficient." Redundancy, you say? Too much red tape. Reorganizing Idaho's government to make it more efficient? Well, do I have an idea from Nebraska for you. It's called a unicameral legislature, and it happens when we take either the Idaho House or the Idaho Senate and just do away with it altogether. At our federal level, our House and Senate make sense as separate bodies. The House is the voice of the people, where representation is proportional to population. California gets 52 representatives, Wyoming gets one. So that makes the Senate, or it makes the House, the voice of the people. But the Senate is the voice of the states, where each state is equally represented by two senators. So they make sense. One is the voice of the people, the other is the voice of the states. But in Idaho, the state is divided into 35 legislative districts of roughly equal population. Each district elects two representatives to the House and one senator to the Senate. So, the House is the voice of the people, and the Senate is the voice of the people, but half as loud? But in the federal Congress, the representatives serve only two-year terms, while the senators serve 6 years. Is there a similar seniority for Idaho senators serving longer terms than the representatives? Nope. In Idaho, both the representatives and the senators serve two-year terms from the same district. So there's your redundancy. The very fact that this DOGE bill that was created in the House stalled out in the Senate is a perfect example of the red tape you're trying to get rid of. How about reorganizing the Idaho government to make it more efficient by proposing a constitutional amendment to abolish the Idaho House? You just saved on 70 redundant positions making $19,913 per year. That's almost $1.4 million right there. Then there's the savings of the per diem, $74 per day for the lawmakers living within 20 miles of Boise, and $221 per day if they live farther away while crashing at their husband's house for 70 people over 80 days. Why, that's got to be close to $1 million. Then add in all the costs of the printing and the offices and the staff, and why, I'll bet you could round up another $600,000. That makes almost $3 million of taxpayer money we could save every year just by eliminating the Idaho House of Representatives. You suppose Idaho DOGE will take up that redundancy and waste? I hope you were able to get out on Saturday to the No Kings protests that were happening all around the country. I made my way out to Grants Pass, Oregon, which is the nearest city to my undisclosed mountain hideaway. It's a city of just roughly 40, 45,000 people, and it's the gateway to the Redwoods, basically. It's a Highway 199 spur that leads off of I-5 and takes you down through the Redwoods to Crescent City and eventually to the Golden Gate Bridge, if you keep following. So it's a beautiful, beautiful part of the country, but also a very red MAGA part of the country. It came in at about 63%. Of the people here voted for Trump. So I was quite surprised when I went out to the event. It was at the Josephine County Courthouse, which itself is located across the street from the Josephine County Republican headquarters. I was expecting to see counter protesters and maybe some problems, but there were very few, very little. In fact, the block was completely filled on 6th Street with people on both sides. Plenty of great signs. And if you'd like to see them, I've got my report on my website at radicalrust.com. Just scroll through and you'll find tons of pictures and a couple of videos as well. Lots of people to meet at the event. Spirits were high, but there were three things that I wanted to point out. Number one, when I went to the protest 2 weeks prior in Medford, Oregon, which Medford's a larger city. It's about 2.5 times the number of voters in Jackson County, which Medford's in, versus Josephine County, where Grants Pass is in. So about two and a half times more voters. And Jackson County was less MAGA. It only went like 55% for Trump. And when I went to the Medford event, it spanned about 4 blocks. It was massive, just at least 8 times the size of what happened in Grants Pass, which is understandable. It's a larger city. But the thing that was notable about the Medford event is despite all these people lining a major thoroughfare through the city, Jackson Street, despite all that, I didn't see any police presence. I think I saw one cop drive through the event, but I didn't see cops on the corner standing there. Quite different in Grants Pass, where in Grants Pass, they made sure to visibly have 2 cops at the front end and 2 cops at the tail end of the protest. So while those cops were there, something happened that I was surprised didn't draw their attention. And it was a guy I'm just going to call MAGA asshole. So MAGA asshole, he's got a blue jacket on and like a white t-shirt underneath, slacks, and he was carrying a pole with 3 Trump 1 signs on it. And he had his Oakley shades on, right? Shaved head. And he was taking his pole with the 3 Trump 1 signs on them and barging his way through the crowd of anti-Trump protesters and just walking down the crowd and back up the crowd and walking with a, like what in the military used to call walking with a purpose, right? Like striding strongly and quickly and forcefully, like he wanted someone to get in his way and bump him, like he wanted to start some shit. I've got the video of him up on my website at radicalrust.com. You can judge for yourself, but to me, he looked like he was trying to start some shit. And the crowd was exhorting everyone else in the crowd, leave him alone, free speech, let him by, don't cause problems, leave him alone, he has free speech too. And I want to counsel my fellow protesters about this. You know that old post about the Crust Punk bar, where the guy is sitting at the Crust Punk bar and the bartender sees some guy come in, and before the guy even has a chance to sit down, he says, no, get the fuck out. Get out of here. Get out of the bar. You now. You're not allowed here. Get out. And, you know, pulling up a baseball bat and forcing the guy to leave. And then the guy at the bar asks, what was the deal with that? And the Crust Punk bartender explains, well, did you see the Iron Cross tattoos he had? So he even though he was dressed nice and polite and everything, this guy's a Nazi. And the minute you let one of these Nazis in, they get set up and, oh, they always send in the nice one first. Well, they always send in the polite one who's well-dressed first. And then once he's in there, he starts bringing some more of his friends. And before you know it, your place is turned into a Nazi bar. That's what I want to warn the protesters about. You cannot let this MAGA asshole traipse through your protest trying to start shit. Even though he looks nice, wearing a jacket, isn't barking at anyone, isn't yelling at anyone, just walking through with a sign. He's the first Nazi. He's the one they send to infiltrate the crowd, and the next protest, there'll be five of them. There'll be 10 of them, all in a group walking through with their Trump signs. Now, I'm not saying you get violent with the guy. I'm not saying anything like that. I am saying perhaps you find five or six of the biggest guys at the protest and form a human wall around this guy everywhere he goes. Don't let these Nazis get established in the midst of our protests. And I was shocked that the cops that were on either end of the protest didn't see what was going on and have a talk with this guy. He was definitely trying to intimidate. The other thing I wanted to bring up from the protest, the other protesters that always show up to these things are the anti-abortion guys. You know the anti-abortion guys, right? They always show up. They've got their little microphone with their megaphone, I should say, yelling at that abortion is murder and you support murder and you're a terrible sinner and you're going to hell and you need to find Jesus. You know all the stuff they tend to say. But they also show up with one of those big-ass signs, and it's usually up way high so you can't cover it up. But he's there with this huge sign of one of those bloody aborted fetus pictures. The shocking, bloody aborted fetus picture that they use to try to shock people.
May I ask a question?
Oh, you just asked a question, but you can ask.
Okay, I'll ask that one. So this poster here, that's a child, right?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking. That's a child?
You don't think it's a child?
No, I'm asking you. Is that a child?
Or are you a man? I'm going to ask you a
question. Can you give me a yes or no answer? Is that a child?
I mean,
in your picture.
You know it is. You know abortion.
Okay, so that's a child.
You know abortion.
And the child is naked, right?
Oh my God!
And the child is dead, right? So what you're displaying is child snuff porn.
Oh, so you support abortion, so you're going to...
So regardless what someone thinks of abortion, why do you think you should come out here and display child snuff porn? That's a dead child in your mind, right? So if that's a dead child and it's naked and it's dead and you're holding a poster of it, doesn't that make you a supporter of child snuff porn? Regardless of what you think about abortion.
Does that soothe your soul to know that you support baby murder and you're trying to justify it somehow?
I haven't told you one way or another what I think of abortion.
Oh, I know you. I know you support abortion.
How do you know?
From your sign.
Because my sign says that I fight fascists. That means that I support abortion.
Kind of a giveaway there when he thinks that fighting fascism means that I'm against his side. Yeah, exactly. I'm against your side because you support child snuff porn. I've never understood how it's legal for these protesters to go out with a picture of an aborted fetus, naked, bloody, and that not run afoul of any sort of obscenity laws. Because if you went out there with a picture of a child, a three-year-old, let's say, that was dead and naked, you would definitely be running afoul of child sexual abuse material laws, wouldn't you? So, the fact that he can get away with displaying the dead bloody fetus is all the evidence you need that that is not a child.
And he goes down smooth. Hey!
Well, that's all the time I got this morning for the show. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. And speaking of the written part, if you check out my blog at RadicalRuss.com, I'm doing a much better job now of writing up some of these stories in my own prose, and including some of the video clips as well. So if you'd like more information on some of the stuff that I'm yammering about on this show, check out RadicalRuss.com. I've probably written it up by now. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalruss.com and nowhere else. And now for your post-credits scene. I saw someone post this the other day on social media that noted the phrase, the light bulb went off. You know, when like you have a great idea and someone says, oh yeah, I had this great idea. The light bulb just went off and I had this great idea. Wouldn't that be the light bulb went on? I've never thought about that before. Shouldn't it be the light bulb went on? You wouldn't say the light bulb went off. That would mean your mind is blank. That has no ideas. The light bulb went on. It's kind of like head over heels, right? I'm head over heels for that girl. Aren't we all always head over heels? Like, if you'd fallen for the girl, wouldn't you be heels over head? It's like putting on your shoes and socks. No, you got to put on your socks first and then your shoes. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff I think about. Maybe I am autistic. Anyway, you can support this podcast financially and by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.